Anyway, today is, what did we say, January 24th, 2016, and I just spoke with New York. They're totally snowbound, Ein Yotzei v'Ein Nichnas, and here in Israel, we're not much behind. The snow hasn't come yet, but the rain has been incessant. It's snowing, in the high points, but they say Tuesday night, Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday night is the real McCoy, or Monday. Monday afternoon and Monday night and Tuesday morning is the real McCoy. Now, with all that being said about the trip and the travel, and everyone knows Rabbi Rubin, wherever I go, everyone asks me, how is Rabbi Rubin? How is Rabbi Rubin? Who is Rabbi Rubin? Wherever I go, he's a legendary figure. Now, we're in the middle of a very interesting tshuva. And again, I want to say to you, when you deal with Rav Menashe Klein, it doesn't mean, someone heard one shiur of mine and he said to me later, he started arguing me with Rav Menashe Klein's psak as if I agree with it. I say, no, I don't agree with many of the psakim I'm quoting. But number one, you have to understand his world. In other words, I have gotten compliments that Rakefet has a hashkafa we may not agree with, but we love the fact he doesn't disagree with other hashkafas. You understand what I'm saying? We have to be positive. I want to understand his world. Not only that, if you give me a few years on Reb Menashe Klein, you'll see how he's a very interesting individual. But I have to go now. I'm in Or HaChaim. I'm dealing with Or HaChaim. And I have to be honest. When they asked that concert in Chol HaMoed a few years ago, I could not understand it. As someone who grew up in Rabbi Soloveitchik's Torah world, Chol HaMoed having a concert with separate seating, what's so wrong? I could not, and there was a tremendous loss of money involved. We're not talking, they just asked at a concert. Everything was arranged in Shveka, right? It's Shveka, right? I don't know the names of all these great people, but who was it? Who was it? Liebe Schmelzer, right? So you're correcting me. I accept the correction with a smile. I don't really know. Oh, I just know Avram Fried and Mordechai Ben David. They're very famous in Israel because they come here all the time. And Avram.
He comes here also. He's in Colombia now.
Liebe, what in Colombia?
Liebe Schmelzer's in Colombia.
What do you mean, Colombia?
He's in Colombia University.
And they let him perform for Haredim in Columbia from Columbia University. That's like what happened in Florida. That
no,
they
he just started. He started like last year.
Kol HaKavod. So it shows you that
he's
our.
Not really part of the. He still lives in Muncie. He's not really part of Square anymore. Since that happened, he's been.
So it's like you're reminding me, I picked up a fabulous Talmud. And he said to me, Rebbe, he was there. I picked him up, I never in my classroom. I don't want to give you more details. You'll identify him here because he has a tie-in to the Kollel. And he said to me, you should know, I'm only frum for two reasons. I said, what do you mean you're only frum? He says, I grew up in Muncie. He said, if you would know what I saw growing up. But he said, my father was honest and I had your shayurim. That kept me frum. So I understand what you're saying. Anyway, I couldn't understand. How do you cancel the concert with separate seating and everything?
I think the
And
problem was that the Rockettes were performing at
please, please, the Rockettes aren't performing in Borough Park. Now,
No, it was in Madison Square Garden. The whole thing took
and tell me,
place.
you don't have rallies? They didn't have the rally against the internet in the city's field, whatever they
No,
call it?
the Rockettes were performing in Madison
Okay.
Square Garden at the same time that Liebe Schmelzer was supposed to be.
Okay, say that. I
have
to,
the same program?
No, the same
Garden had a
building, the
number
same building.
of
All right, it doesn't matter. Let me move further.
That's the excuse they use.
Okay,
that
so
was what they
so anyway, he gets this question, and we dealt with it. We started last week. Are you allowed to have concerts? And he talks about separate seating. So Rav Menashe Klein gives many powerful reasons that singing, the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we quoted, that how do you take Shir HaShirim and turn it into plain, simple songs? Now, I want to tell you, this touches upon a problem that the Haredi world probably can't deal with. But did you ever study some of the literature of the medieval period, particularly Spanish Jewry, with some of the most famous names that we know of among the Rishonim and among the Paitanim, they actually have poetry where there are overtones of love and sexuality. And you see, this leads into a tremendous discussion, which is not for now, but I just want to call your attention to it. How do you deal with Shir HaShirim? How do you translate Shir HaShirim? Do you deal with it as a total allegory? Or do you deal with it both as an allegory, but as a very sensual piece of poetry that gives you deep insight into what love is all about, what commitment is all about, what attraction is all about, the dod and the doda? And you see, this is not a simple question. To me, Shir HaShirim has to be understood on two levels. And I would be very happy if all the people getting married would get a good shayur on Shir HaShirim on the basic level of love, commitment, an expression that God put into man, the sensuous attraction between male and female, which is the secret of our existence. And maybe if we approached it that way, we'd have less divorce in our, more commitment. Again, I've spoken about this many times, but if you talk about America, and ask me about America, when you see all the divorce and how the children are affected, believe me, it isn't encouraging. But nevertheless, we can't be peritzim or peritzim. Our concept of love is different than a Hollywood concept, than Lo Aleinu. I can give you a simple example from life today, if you know what's going on and what happened with the New York Times and the counter-reaction, and ultimately, which I'm talking about, Mordechai Gafni, Mordechai Winias, whatever name you know him by, Mark Gafni, Mark F. Gafni, and Sarah Kabakow. I give this lady all the credit in the world. Unfortunately, I know the whole story from the time she was 13. She was very close to my daughter, and I'm very close to the family in general. And she went public with her name. And they had to cancel the invitation to Winias. He became, even with the New York Times behind him, it became too hot a potato for normal, decent people. But one of the people interviewed in the New York Times, this lady said, yes, he's a fabulous teacher. He's charismatic. He's for mature individuals. You know what that means? It means mature individuals can sexual sex like Clinton, like everything that goes on in the modern world. It's the exact opposite of what Torah stands for, of what family purity stands for, of what Tarat HaMishpacha stands for, of the Gemara Nida that we spoke about of number a decade ago, Kadei Shetihei Chabiba Al-Bala Keshat Kenisatal L'Chupa HaKol Yodim, the Gemara in Shabbos Loma HaKala Nichneset L'Chupa. But if you talk about it, you have 7 years of bad luck. So these are tremendous questions. How do we balance it out? And to me, that's what the Torah is all about. Kadesh et atzmecha b'muta lecha. And this is why in our world, thank God, you don't have to break and run. We had a wonderful Rebbe in the Rav, that you could find yourself in the Torah world, the general world. There was not a contradiction. You lived, Geva Tosha V'Nachi Machem. There was a balance, Torim Derech Eretz, call it as you wish. And what he alludes to here, it's an endless discussion. But he takes it for granted that there cannot be Shiri Agavim, what he calls sensual songs, Shir HaShirim, that we spoke about at the Gemara Sanhedrin. Also, you talk about mixed seating. So can you have mixed seating at concerts, men and women? And of course, he goes back to the Gemara in Sukkah, the Shinchat Beit HaShoeva, the Pasuk in Zechariahu, and if at a time of mourning, they had to separate men and women. Allah had come of a come at a time of Simcha, and even when it's a Shinchat Beit HaShoeva. And then he quoted the Sefer Chassidim, and how important it is that to keep the men and women separate. And that led us into the Taz, as you recall, and that even by a chatuna, you shouldn't bring a leitzan. You shouldn't bring a clown what's the word you would use in English? What's the word?
A
batchan. What's the English word for a batchan? A joker, a comedian, a jester. Call them as you wish. That the Taz actually said a batchan ad kedei kach, and you see, Klal Yisrael didn't accept it. The frumer you are, or I don't want words to use from, it's not a good expression. The more charedi you are in outlook and dress, the more the chances there'll be a batchan at your wedding. You follow? I never yet saw at a kippah sruga wedding, at a sarug, they now have a new term they coined in Hebrew, at a sarug wedding, I never yet saw a batchan. But at a wedding that'll take place on shtitzel, you can see a batchan, you understand?
Moshe, you
saw the exception to the rule. Every rule has exceptions. I've been at 1,001 shrug weddings. I never yet saw a batchan. But if you go to a Hasidic wedding, a Rebbe wedding, it's not shayach not to have a batchan. Not only that, the batchan brings in the gifts. You don't even know this. In Europe, the batchan, it was like a rabbi making an appeal. The batchan would get up and praise the chatan, the kallah, and the yichis, but now they have to build a house. Who will help buy the beds? Who will help buy the linens? Who will help buy the dishes? Who will buy? And the people poured in money. A batchan's success was measured. But you follow me, Danny? Batchan's success was measured by his ability to wake up the kahal. Then we ended off the class, and that was a very interesting source I showed you. That remember in the Mishnah Brura, that even when men and women work, that the women should not be singing, even though the Gemara says when you work and you sing, it helps you work better. And it's like having classical music on. I remember the Rav got the Shaila, so when driving during the 9 days, if he could hear classical music, he asked the Rav, he said, Rebbe, you know, I always drive, I hear classical music, it calms me. And the Rav's attitude was, does it make you a better driver? Yes. Hear the classical music. You know, the Rav held it's not Simchat Mereyot. That what's usher is Simchat Mereyot. Listening in a car is not Simchat Mereyot. But if it makes him a better driver, let him listen. But then so men and women working together. And then I ended off the class. I showed you the source of the biography on Michael Tress, that's unbelievable. I still am in a state of shock when I think about it. When Jonathan Rosenblum writes, and by the way, it's a beautiful biography. They called him Mike, Rebbe Elimelech Tress, and he was a very fascinating individual. Zeichet Tzadik Lebracha. Rav Moshe Scherer's first cousin, their mothers were sisters, and these are two people who were raised basically in a certain surroundings that were not like today. Most of their families became totally irreligious, and these two people went on to greatness in the Torah world. Everyone knows about Moshe Scherer. Unfortunately, Mike Tress died young. So he's not that well known, but his Hatzalah work was unbelievable. So here he describes, he has this firm, textile, whatever, and how he was the foreman, and all these frum women who worked for him. You have a footnote there with a list of who's who in women who went on to marry Gedolei Yisrael, Malamdei Torah, and whenever a man walked into the room, they stopped singing. And this is such a Bava Maisa, because 1930s in America, I told you, young Israels had dances. There's a famous Rosh Yeshiva that you all know. His parents, who brought him into this world, met at a dance in the young Israel in the late 30s, perhaps early 40s. And I lived it, so no one can tell me it's not true. I can give you another example. Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein, his grandson, Rabbi Aaron Reichel, wrote The Maverick Rabbi. How many of you have read that book? Okay, it's a very important volume. He's a very interesting individual. He was the Rabbi Steve Riskin of 100 years ago. And Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein, who was the first, I told you, there were three famous names, Goldstein, Lichtenstein, and Young. And Goldstein was considered the firmest among them. And he was an Agudat Yisrael, officially. And Young was at least poly Agudat Yisrael. Lichtenstein, of course, was Mizrahi. And he had dancers in his shul. And his poor grandson struggles to try to understand how his grandfather allowed it. But that was the state of Torah in America in the 30s into the 40s. Ribbono Shel Olam, that women knew not to sing. I cannot conceive of being true. So I told you I asked the author and I wasn't happy with the answer. All right, now I want to go further. And here we come, this is serious business. These are Gemaras. And how do we deal with it? And he quotes the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Chet Amud Bet, Ashrei Ha'ish Asher Lo Halach L'Trimiyot U'L'Kakasaot. And what does this mean? The Gemara talks about Jews that Ashrei Ha'ish, that you don't go to circuses, you don't go to public performances of non-Jews. And what does this mean? A circus? All right. The Rishonim, and he quotes here, the Maram Kapfusi. This is quoted, you'll see all the sources from, and these are Rishonim, when he's not quoting Achronim, that, what does it mean just to go to hear Leit Sonnet, just to go to hear jokes, to see circus acts? Chazal had a very negative attitude. Yet we have circuses. Yerushalayim, I still remember, it hasn't happened recently, but I remember Hanukkah time, they brought in a circus from Romania, and Frum people brought it in, Frum kids went to the circus. So it could be, and this is the way Klal Yisrael has accepted.
The circus in Roman times has different...
So it could very well be that we can't just dismiss circuses and theaters. It has to do with idol worship, with idolatry, with sex. Lo Aleinu, there was in Tel Aviv, in North Tel Aviv, where I spent Shabbat a number of weeks ago to be at my Talmud shul. So in North Tel Aviv, in one of these bars, whatever you want to call them, women were having sex on the table in public. They just decided not to press charges because it was consensual. But they are charging them with lewd acts in public. You know, they'll get off with a fine. They're not going to sit in jail for it. But Hashem Yirachem, you can do the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, excuse me, Sanhedrin, Ayin Gimel Amud Bet, Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, Yodin Chayu Yisrael Ba'avodah Zarah, Shein Ba'mamash Velo Chayu Avdim Avodah Zarah, Ele Lahatir Lechem Arayut Sheber Pachesia. And you see, part of that idol worship, it was involved idolatry, adultery, and this could very well be, from our point of view, that there's nothing wrong with circus if it's acrobatics and all that goes with it. There may be a different problem. We'll come to that in a few minutes. But he quotes here that this is goyish, this is circus, this is wasting time. What's the difference if it's an Orthodox theater, I'm quoting him now, or some other type of theater, but it's skulk, like Sonnet, and this is forbidden. All right? No, I want to ask you a question. Jackie Mason. What do you have to say about Jackie Mason? Think for a minute. Jackie Mason is one of us. I learned in Lakewood. His brothers were in Lakewood. Mazur was the name. M-A-Z-U-R, if I remember correctly. Jackie Mason, very insightful. And Jackie Mason says, I knew I had to leave the rabbinate and become a comedian when people laughed more at my jokes during the sermon than taking the idea to heart. And Jackie Mason, very insightful. I use one of his lines. I taught, by the way, you should know, I taught his nieces they would not talk about him. The family is mamish 100% frum, to the extent that they're ashamed of him. And I said, at least he's married to a Jewish woman, you understand, for someone who's so successful and Broadway and whatnot. At least he's married to a Jewish woman and retains a Jewish identity. But all right, ani lo malamed zchut. But I'll give you an example. You talk about gaiva, you talk about life, you talk about humility. I've used this many times, husband and wife relationships. There's the famous story of Reb Mordechai, Reb Meir Elyablach. You understand why I said Reb Mordechai? It was a tell story, a true story. They swear it's true. Happened in Cleveland. That this guy got married, and I've seen this, you know, I've spoken about this at length when I speak about Musa. One of the real problems we have in the yeshiva world is we want the youngster to be proud of himself. God let Adam, you're a Ben Torah. No, a guy becomes a Ben Torah and he's learning and he can become a big Baal Gaiva at the same time. And this is a real problem. So you have a case in Cleveland, this guy gets married, he's in the kollel, he's one of the best guys in Tells, and he complains to the Rosh Yeshiva that his wife has him throw out the garbage. So the Rosh Yeshiva tells him, you're right, I'll talk with her, etc. The next morning there's a knock on his door, and there's Reb Elia Meir Bloch, and he says, I came to throw out your garbage. It's Reb Elia Meir Bloch. Yeah. All right, the story is mitgalgel, it doesn't matter. But it's a true story. I heard it Bishat Maisa before Rav Gifter was even well known. He might have not even been the Rosh Yeshiva yet. So, see, that's a powerful story. So now you have Jackie Mason's version. Jackie Mason tells the story, what are Jewish women like, what it's like to be married to a Jewish woman. She says, he is a man, he has a multi-million dollar business. By day, everyone calls him Mr. Big Shot, Mr. Big Shot. Everyone runs after him, gives him cover. Anything he says to his secretary, within a minute, it's accomplished. And then he comes home, and his wife tells him, Chaim, good to see you. Throw out the garbage. But it's not only her garbage. She collected garbage from all the neighbors. He should throw out the garbage. Now, that little story by Jackie Mason, you can turn into a whole Mrs. Shmuis. Is it good to throw out the garbage? Hey, maybe your wife did a very smart thing. She knows how big a Baal Gaiva you might become, so she collected garbage from the neighbors. Not a bad idea. And now you get involved, which I understand my daughter tells me, shtissel, you know what shtissel is? It's the talk of Israel. It's all over. It's going on Ritz Aleph now. It's unbelievable. It's it began with Hechatzea, was a 26-part soap opera on a Rebbe's court. I have a special love for it because it was written by a great genius who happens to be my granddaughter-in-law's first cousin. He's the ambassador to England. He just finished this. It's the biggest Talmud Chacham I've ever represented Israel. A genius mind. So, Danny Taub, excuse me. He's an enikel from the Majidstam. On his mother's side, he's from the Shatam Seifer. On the other side, it's my granddaughter-in-law's family. So they followed that now with an ongoing soap opera. It won all the prizes last year. Now it's finished the second season. It's on a family in Geula, the Meir Shearim Geula. And it's been acclaimed. And the Haredim are watching it clandestinely. Everyone is very impressed with it because it captures their world with love and affection. And my daughters are laughing at me because they say I always see positive, and I saw already on their WhatsApp or something website, family deal, Saba thinks that anyone who plays in it is going to be mitchazek and become more committed in their observance. One of them already said he became more committed as a result. And these are famous stars. So in there, my daughter tells me the second season they get involved with Novotic, going into a drugstore and asking for potatoes. Am I right?
Nails.
Asking for nails in a drugstore. Fine. My original version was potatoes. That's what I heard when I learned in Novotic 125 years ago. So, you see, these are very interesting questions. Can you go to a theater? Can you go to a Broadway show? What does a Broadway show do to you? Now, a movie just came out, Hollywood. And again, it's the same question. I saw the movie came out, Hollywood. Boy, I'm jet lagged. Brooklyn, made in Hollywood called Brooklyn. Have you heard of it? So I went, they were showing it in a senior citizens, where you buy an apartment, everyone is older there. It's not senior citizens, but it's a gated village about half a mile from the Young Israel of Hollywood. So last Saturday night, my dear friends there invited us, we'll pick you up after Shabbos, you're tired, you spoke all Shabbos, come, you relax. Again, Hollywood has to make a movie. If it didn't have one scene, actual sex, it would be a beautiful movie to take teenagers to. Anyone who went in Aliyah has to see that movie. I wish we could get a modified version. Why? It deals with an Italian, an Irish girl coming to America, and it must be early 50s, late 40s, early 50s, meeting an Italian individual, an Italian boy. And she goes back to Ireland, and she faces the conflict, will she come back to Brooklyn? When you see that movie, it's exactly what an American goes through when he comes to Israel, at least in my time. I would believe it's today also true, though it's easier today. And it's the whole culture conflict. It's Rakefetz Divrei Torah, Lech Lecha Mi'atzcha Mi'molatcha Mi'Beit Avich. I can't repeat that, it'll take too long, but you know, the order is not right. When you leave home, you leave Beit Avicha first. But now, you know my Divrei Torah. It's a very interesting question. And there was so much in that movie. I told afterwards we had a little popcorn and, you know, drink, American style. And I told the people around me that I could give a half year worth of shiurim on the issues raised in that movie and apply it to the state of Israel. Coming, a different culture, a different language, a different understanding, a different way of driving, a different mentality. And this is what my wife always quotes the Ibn Ezra, that we will always be the Dor HaMidbar. Our children already are much more integrated. They don't want to hear about America. My daughters are furious about any Orthodox Jew who remains in America. My grandchildren already ain't maladaber. My great-grandchildren, Baruch Hashem. But we are the Dor HaMidbar. So you see, look what I'm saying to you. You can take any Broadway show with a decent message and you can deal with it. It's life, it's emotion, it's being a human being. This takes us back to the famous question with Reb Aaron Lichtenstein that he was asked in public, the chutzpah of Israelis, but this is many decades ago. And Reb Aaron was asked, remember I spoke about it at the Hesped, at my Hesped for Reb Aaron? I spoke about it, and people quoted it and requoted it. What do we get out of English literature? Why should we study English literature? What's there in literature? Why do we waste time? We have Shas, Paiskim, Agada, Medrash. And they're asking about Lichtenstein, you know, with tongue in cheek, someone who has a PhD from Harvard in English literature. You remember Aaron's answer? Oh, you don't remember. Okay, I'll just repeat it. I apologize to the professors listening who know all my stories throughout the generations. I apologize, but it's a different class. It's different students. So you see what happened was the old Israel that I came to, you know where you were buried? You were buried on the streets of Machne Yehuda. That's where they did the Hespedim. There were no places to do eulogies. The Tahara was done. Sharei Tzedek was on Rehov Yafa, that historic building that's now used by the broadcast authority. The Tahara was done on the side, and then they carried the body out on a stretcher. And on the street, a block away from the market, that's where they were maspit. Someone died, a parent of an Alon Shvat student, Haaretz Yom student, it's the early 70s. The funeral was there. I knew that family. The mother, the widowed mother, was the secretary of BMT. So I went to the funeral. In the middle of the funeral, while Rav Amital is speaking, Rav Aaron is speaking, they're being maspid, the Chevra Kadisha comes over and says, Anshuldik! Yesh lanu old chavaya achshav. Tazuzu, move down. The middle, it was unbelievable. So Rav Baran turned to the audience. How many of you were at that funeral? 100 hands went up. Tell me, had the Chevra Kadisha studied Hamlet by Shakespeare, would they have acted that way? And those who knew Hamlet went crazy. And those who didn't know Hamlet went out of their way to... They asked the Americans, what's a... Death, be not proud. Remember the... Okay, so you see, this is a very interesting question. And I will accept what Shaya said, that when the Gemara talks about the Tetra'ot and the Kikusim, as we call it in modern Hebrew, it means where there was Avodah Zarah, where there was Gilui Arayot, where there was Kol Minei Bitul Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. But I'm not yet ready to say that the literature and even Jackie Mason's jokes, I can be Melamed Zchut. Just think about that joke with take out the garbage and look what I did with it. I told the story about Rebellion Meir Bloch. All right, you claim it's Reb Mordechai Giftah, so maybe I didn't have a slip of the tongue. And I tied it together with Nevadik, and we also ultimately wind up in Shtisel. And why is this important? Because it gives us a chance to think. It brings our world to life. It's real. It's tangible. All right? But he doesn't accept it. Now, he also deals, and I don't know if he's reacting here to a feminist challenge or just the wise guy said to him, Ashrei ish shelo halach. But it doesn't apply to women. Why can't women go chalamayim? And why can't they go to a concert? They don't have the yisurim that men have. So he says, of course, that, and evidently someone gave him a dig, saying it's men. Men who have the problem of Beitul Torah, not women. We'll come to that in a second, the Beitul Torah, I expect. Ashrei ish, he says, ish is when we refer to humanity in general, we always say ish, we always say Adam, he, okay? The feminists object, you know, that they have a Haggadah, Lo Aleinu, where everything is changed, the God of Sarah, Rivka, Rachel and Leah. You've seen that, I mean, the davening, everything. Look, there's nothing to be ashamed of. This is, we use the general term. It doesn't, God forbid, mean. At that level, a woman is an ish too. She's a human being. She's an Adam. She's man and woman totally equal. So he says, don't tell me that women can go and men can't go. Ashrei ish asher lo halach. But then he deals with one more problem. And this problem to me is real, and it's one of the great differences between religious observance in Israel to religious observance, at least in America, Canada, as I know it. I can't speak for South Africa or Australia, but I have a feeling it may be the same all over. And this is very simple. People came along, Vishamati, people said to me, what are you getting so upset about? It's Chalamayid. And Chalamayid, you have to be in a simcha. You have to rejoice. V'samachta b'chagecha, and you have to make your children happy. And this is what chalamai. This is what chag is all about. And therefore, if you take your children, what's wrong? They're happy. They're rejoicing. What's wrong? This is chalamai. And here he gets involved. Is this the right way to celebrate Chol HaMoed? And he quotes already Yerushalmi. You see the sources. Why do we have a Chol HaMoed? More time to learn Torah. During the week, all right, my life is learning Torah, studying Torah, teaching Torah. But I have to be honest, not everyone can be that way. Lehefer, if someone doesn't have the ability, one of the things I said that made a big impression on the Chafetz Chaim faculty, I never realized I say things that made such a big impression. I quoted my wife. I said to them, Alamda, and I worked it in, maybe it's on YUTorah.org, that lecture. So I don't know how. Again, I don't know what, when I teach or anything, I know my basic concepts, but I don't know exactly what I'm going to say. So I worked into the lecture that you malamdim have to know how to teach. And the secret of teaching is to love every student. And I said, you know, my wife often says to me, 57 years of teaching, and I taught, you know, elementary, Talmud Torah, high school, college, postgraduate. No, I've loved every student. She said, you love every student. You know, I said, yeah, you're right. I have students who are gangsters. It's true. Not everyone is a tzaddik. But a Rebbe's job is to reach out to everyone's neshama. Every kid, even a gangster, has a neshama. If Rabbi Rubin will remember, we once had the teacher, Gil Klapperman, Rabbi Gilbert Klapperman. So he always would speak about when he was a young rabbi, his first shteller, I think it was in Newark, and he was a mismach of Rabbi Moshe and Rabbi Revel, and he should live me well. He's not in the best of health today. He's well into his 90s. So a gangster dies or was killed in a shootout, a Jewish gangster, and he has to eulogize him. Now, what do you say about a Jewish gangster? You see, but even there he said, you have to find the good point. And he found he was mechabed his parents. He was like the mafia. They had respect for their parents, their wives. They could shoot you at night, or they could shoot you by day, but at night they were good family men. And he, that's what he based. So you see, everyone has some good in them, and that's a Rebbe's job. If you don't have that feeling, I said, it's not good to be a Rebbe, because you can raise children. You know, I don't have to tell you what's gone on with use YU. Can you imagine the kids who are still angry at the teachers who they accused of? I don't want to say it in public, but you all know what the New York Times wrote about. No, you've destroyed some of these kids. A Rebbe has to have love. One of the greatest compliments I ever got, I revealed a true story, 1969, I'm on Aleph Hadash to Israel. I'm working at the encyclopedia, and there was a student I taught in MTA, in what today we call MTA, Manhattan Talmudical Academy. And this kid, totally hefker, at the Hebrew U in the dorm, and people came to me at the encyclopedia. Wow. You should know this kid was on drugs and liquor and women and going crazy, and he was all stooped out, and while he's all out of it, he's crying, and in his tears he's saying, I only met one good rabbi in my life, I only met one honest rabbi in my life, Rabbi Rothkopf was the only one I ever knew that I could look up to. So God have mercy. If you don't love your students, they're going to hate you 50 times over. God forbid if you do something wrong. But if you're a decent Rebbe and you love Torah and you love human beings, and we'll come to this tomorrow, Shia lends itself to this, you're going to have good impact. And this hit home. Very, very important. Not everyone can be a Rebbe. No, you're not a Rebbe. You own a big food store in Queens. Let me give a little publicity in Kew Gardens Hills. There's what's it called?
Casino Farms.
Right? Remember that Casino Farms. Beautiful kosher place. I once stopped in Mincha there, a minion. No, I can assure you, the owners of that store don't have much time to learn Torah. They have to know what's going on, all right? You have to, but Chalamayit, all right? You can loosen up. You have others. You have people working under you. Chalamayit, time to learn Torah. So he goes berserk. That Dafka Chalamayit, when you have time to learn Torah, and you're going to go to hear music, songs, and I have to say, Chutz Laretz, Chalamayit, everyone is on a tiyul. I read b'mishpachar, I see advertisements, they rent out Hershey's in Pennsylvania, Sukkot put up, kosher food, unbelievable. And thousands come, their amusement parks, glad kosher that day. Thousands come. Now how do you view it? More than that, he quotes the Maharil. You sitting, Mark? that the whole reason, I'm quoting the Maharil, Yitzchak, I'm not making this up, this is the Mishnah Halacha quoting the Maharil, that the whole reason that Dava Avod is Mutar and Cholamai is you shouldn't feel bad. If you feel bad, you can't learn Torah B'Simcha. You should be able to learn B'Simcha, happiness. So let's say a store announces Cholamai, they're selling everything 50% off. Run and buy Dava Avod, buy, and then go back to learning Torah. So you see the whole thrust on Cholamai has to be Lima Torah. All right, I need not tell you. There's the ideal and the reality. And my wife, you know, would always say whenever I get upset with kids for doing slot, like I got very upset. Whenever I'm in Chutz Laretz, I see Shabbos, they go play basketball, they go play football, they go play baseball. We find a Shalom, where's their Shabbos? And so what do you want them to do? They're not into learning. Am I right? My wife is right, but I'm also right. It's not a way to observe Shabbos. I'm sorry. So, Cholamoed, what can you do? Fukhazi mayama davar. And in America, there are a lot of outings, a lot of amusement parks. Let the children let off a little wild oats. I have to say, in Israel, it's a totally different feeling on Cholamoed. The Kotel alone, millions of people go to the Kotel, mob scenes. And it's not just they go to the Kotel, they make a tour of Yerushalayim, generally speaking, Pesach and Sukkot, the weather is very, very good, generally speaking. There are exceptions. I remember 1970, it rained all 7 days of Pesach. I'll never forget that. It was a dry winter, and Pesach was early, and the rain did not cease for 7 days. But generally speaking, Pesach is beautiful, and people are coming Bircha Kohanim at the Kotel. I mean, you have no idea. They do it not second day Yontif. You know why? Because thousands fly in from Europe just for Birchat Kohanim. And it's a sight to see the way people with their iPads, with their magic phones, have you seen it at the Kotel? While the Kohanim are giving the bracha, they're broadcasting to Belgium, to London, to Paris, all over Europe, could be to America, but there's a big time difference there. They're broadcasting from the Kotel. So, and not only that, you take Sukkot, Simchat Beit HaShoevah. No, I don't have to tell you what goes on here night after night after night. People make the rounds by the Rebbeim, by the Heichal Shlomo. What goes on with the announcements and the speakers and the entertainment. All right. I don't know if Rabbi Nasha Klein would totally approve, but there's no doubt in my mind that we are much better off religious-wise in Israel on Cholamoed than in Chutz La'aretz. And anyone who's been here for the Chag knows what I'm saying. It's Dava Yedua. It doesn't need any proof. Okay, Ad Kan, this tshuva. But now we go. So, all right, Halacha L'maisa, I have to say, he asks a concert, even with separate seating. You can understand why they called off that concert. And he brings many sources. And as Talmidei Chachamim, we have to deal with the sources. I always go back, the Rav in Maimonides, there was school on Cholamoed Sukkos. Why? Imagine, so the kids should sit in the sukkah and be no tell lulav and etrog. You understand? So, dar v'dashav, as I've explained many times, what's good for one generation may not be good for the next, etc. Yitzchak, in modern times, in Maimonides, is there school on Cholamoed Sukkos?
I don't know. But when I was in Maimonides, a lot of the families were poor.
Right.
Couldn't even afford an etrog and lulav.
Right.
Some of the families didn't build their own sukkah. So that's why the Rav permitted it.
Right. No. When I grew up, who could build a sukkah? We were in tremendous apartment buildings. Who saw a private house in the Bronx? The shuls had the sukkot. And we had the big problem, I told you, Shabbos. How do you get food? And there was a big problem, big problem.
Also, there was a question about writing on the Chol Moed and all that.
Writing. It depends what. By the way, Chiddush Torah, the Bach already says it's Dava Ovid, because each day you have to be Mechadesh. I remember one time I was with Rav Lifshitz Michal Abayit, and he was giving me, he told me to write something. Oh, do you write on Michal Abayit? I said, Rebbe, it's Dava Ovid. You're telling me something that I have to write down right now. But I laughed because he's telling me to write, and then he's worried I'm frumer than he is, even if I was frumer, but in front of your Rebbe, you're not allowed to show frumkeit like that. Yes, Moshe.
I think Rav Maaz tell his school on Chol Hamoed because either the parents are not so religious or you have an app, you don't have a
book. Could be.
Day school had school on Chol Hamoed.
Which day school?
Manhattan Day School
had school on Chol Hamoed?
In sixth grade.
Rabbi Hertz, yeah.
Same thing.
Chol Hamoed.
When I first started teaching, I had school on Chol Hamoed, but the biggest problem was the rabbein didn't want to come in. They wanted to go to their families and spend time with them, so eventually they had to
knock it out. No, here there's no school on Chol Hamoed. It's a given in all sections of the Torah world.
But of course, in Israel, everybody's Jewish, and the whole country's Jewish. Nobody's going to say that you can't go to a sukkah. Everybody knows what a sukkah is. No. In New York City, there are people that that don't know what a sukkah is.
No, I understand. When you say everyone knows what a sukkah is, you have no idea how correct you are. When I came in Aliyah, I was in a state of shock. My first sukkah is here. People would build sukkah on balconies with a balcony overhead. You follow tachat ha'etz, mamish pasul, 100%. So I said, why are they building? These are traditional Jews, and you have to have a sukkah. This is a sukkah. They don't realize that it's mamish doesn't get off the floor. But I don't know if you see that today. I think, have you seen that recently? I haven't seen it.
No, but what you do see is a sukkah all of a sudden on the sidewalk, in a parking lot.
Right.
There's no question that there is an atmosphere of Chol Moed in Israel that is
Well, you have it nowhere else in the world, right? You see sukkahs all over the place, on the sidewalk, the restaurants, it's no end to Baruch Hashem.
Most of the federal prisons have sukkah, except in my high-rise, there's no place to have it. There's a fence and a small...
So here we have... Here we have a chaplain from a federal prison, and there they have sukkah, and where you live, you don't have a sukkah, all right?
No. The prison, and it's a high-rise detention center... Your average federal correctional institution, they know to accommodate Jews, they need to buy...
Hate to tell you this, I'm pretty sure there must be sukkot kosher mahadrin in certain federal prisons with Dalai Hakima. Okay, we're going to come in now to two very fascinating tshuvot. And again, may inyan liinyan lioto inyan, and... You have to understand the world and what he's being asked, but this is Chelik Yud Bet of Mishnah Halacha, Siman Shin Chet. And this is something Halacha Lamaisa that every rabbi has. All right, we have Orthodox shuls. Every shul I've spoken in since 1980 has been an Orthodox shul. In 1980, I was sent by the government of Israel as a scholar in residence at the University of Denver. And one of the synagogues that invited me was a Reformed temple, the men's club of a Reformed temple. So I checked with the local rabbi. I said, this is the greatest. It's not in the synagogue. It's in the, a side room. But they know you're Orthodox. You go in and speak. So I made eternal friends that are so close to me until today. What do you think I spoke about in the men's club of a Reformed synagogue? I spoke on family purity, Tarat Mishpacha. And it was amazing how it hit home. The Orthodox people were so impressed that I would speak on a topic like that to these people, and people who know nothing about it, you understand the marriage, boredom in marriage is a real problem in a promiscuous society like Western culture today. Now, when you speak about Chaviva Labala, it leaves a very, very big impression. So, we all have Orthodox shuls. Fine, you have a mechitza, no problem with davening. All right, now you have a guest lecturer. It's the middle of the week, Wednesday night. The shul is proud to sponsor a lecture by a guest from Jerusalem, Rabbi Dr. A.R.R. Okay, I think you know him. No? Mixed seating? Separate seating? Mechitza? We all have this problem. We all have this question. Moshe, why did I haven't said a word yet? What's up?
If you're, regardless, if you're in a situation where people
don't
know Maran, I understand if you're going to a
Chari. Moshe, relax. So you're saying, you're giving the answer I give. When anyone ever asks me, you know, separate seating, and I can already hear in their voice what they're saying, I say to them, look, I follow the minhag ha'makom. I'm a guest. Whatever the synagogue does, I'll accept. It's not a problem for me. I can tell you, I rarely come across a situation where the men and women are separate, which I would prefer. L'chatchila, if someone would ask me, I want to give a shir, you know, if I'm stam telling jokes like Jackie Mason, that's one thing. But when you're giving a shir, no, it's a difference. The 11 topics I spoke on in Florida were what the topics they requested. So they ranged from some serious shir. I gave a shir on going up the Har HaBayit. I dealt with the Piskei HaRambam, the Ravid, etc. Then I gave a shir they wanted on Yom Tov Sheni. All right, that's serious bananas. So if you would ask me l'chatchila, I would say men and women sitting separately. All right, when you speak about the Shanghai story, or you speak about the Mossad in Russia, I wouldn't say that's a shir, but I rarely have encountered where they separate the men and women, although occasionally, yes. Generally speaking, davening is separate, but a public lecture is mixed. He gets the question, 1991 from France. And here you have a sociological phenomenon. No? What's the most famous question ever asked from France? The Sridei Eish, mixed organizations, Ezra, after World War II. We discussed it in class. Rabbi Koopman, the late Rabbi Koopman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, who died literally the day I flew. Before I got on the plane, I got a call from my daughter. And Rabbi Koopman has a lot of skuyot. He was the first to teach women Torah on a high level. He was the first person in the world, maybe outside of Tells in Europe, in Yavna, to give women a chance to study with Gedolei Yisrael. Now, people can criticize him. I know he's criticized in the right-wing world, where it opened the Pandora's box, and if you know in Israel, Kolech, some of the leaders of Kolech are Michlala graduates from very prominent Haredi families. And Rabbi Koopman was asked that just recently, and he answered these girls were already running away from the Haredi world before they got to Michlala. Yeah, we're dealing with a work in operation. You all know my attitude. We can't send the women back to the kitchen and lock them into the house. They're today women are neurosurgeons, women are pilots, women are doing a lot of great things that they never dreamt about 100 years ago. In a world like this, we have to allow women who want to express themselves the ability to express themselves spiritually. And you all know the Rakefet solution, RA and SA. And let me come back here. Think what Rabbi Weinberg was asked and what Rabbi Weinberg answered. Eit la'asot la'ashem chayferu toratecha. There's a different reality in Germany. He quotes Rabbi Hildesheimer. There's a different reality in France. We don't want to push these children away. If we're not going to allow them to have a mixed group, it will break up and they'll have no Yiddishkeit whatsoever. And Rabbi Chiyuliak of Weinberg was mater the mixed singing in what they called the Ezra, not to be mixed up with Ezra in Israel, more like Bnei Akiva of that period. Now it's 1991. France has greatly changed. What brought about the change? France was the most assimilated country in the Jewish world. The rate of assimilation there, France, equality, liberty, tolerance, the French Revolution, the French Republic, Jews accepted, no anti-Semitism. Wow. Assimilation like the United States today. Intermarriage, wholesale, Reform Judaism, or there they call it liberal Judaism. And at the time after World War II, these were survivors who were fighting for their lives to remain Jewish. It was a different story. But then you had the upheaval in the French protectorates and all the Tunisians and the Algerians and the Moroccans and the people from Djerba were allowed in, automatically being granted French citizenship. And these Jews already were infinitely more traditional than what you had before. The Ashkenazim no longer were the majority, or at least were no longer a noticeable majority. The Sfardim Eidot HaMizrach came in, and religious standards changed. You all know that today. Take a look at what's pouring into Israel from France, the assimilated country, and by far, almost a total majority, almost I would say unanimous, either totally religious, observant, or traditional, Misorati. You barely find a French Oled to Israel who is totally secular. Barely find it.
It's true of Americans also.
Well, yeah, the Olim. But who would ever dream you would have so many religious Jews coming out of France? The entire situation changed because of the influx of the Eidot HaMizrach. Now, the person asking this, you see right away, is Eidot HaMizrach Elio Bakuvza, if I'm pronouncing it right. No Ashkenazi has a name like that. And he's a Rav in France, and he writes, Morenu Hara Rabbi Elio Bakuvza Shlita Bal Mechabes Sefi Yad Eliyahu Brit Safat. And he lives in France, 1991. This is who he is corresponding with. And what's his problem? He turns to Reb Menashe Klein, and you have to see Reb Menashe Klein's prestige or his persomet, as he is known. How would you say persomet in English? His publicity, the knowledge of him, that not only are people from YU turning to him, from France they're turning to him. Esfardi, excuse me?
Reputation.
His reputation, persomet, reputation. You know you've lived in Israel too long if the Hebrew comes easier than the English. Persomet, his reputation, okay? The knowledge of him is persomet. And what's his question? That he gives drashot in his shul, and he wants a mechitza between the men and the women. And the balabatim are fighting him. What's wrong with teaching men and women in a shul? It's not a time of davening. Why can't they sit mixed? And they're giving him an argument. And they're demanding to know why he is hesitant and why he says it is usa. And where is his sources. Question number two, and I have to tell you, this is halacha lemaisa. We see it all the time. I see that at my grandchildren's weddings. Question number two, they make a wedding and they set up a mechitza only for the dancing and not for the suda. And my balabatim claim that at the time of eating, we don't need a mechitza at all, and men and women can sit together. Is this correct? Or do we have to have that same mechitza and separate them? Okay, let's go backwards in time.
Where he didn't say anything about sitting, but during the chuppah.
I believe during the chuppah he takes for granted it has to be separate. That's not even the shayla. The shayla is afterwards. Now, let's go back in time. In all the movies we see of European weddings, clippage, video clippage, or movie clippage, call it what you wish, the DVDs today, computerized, the website, generally speaking, you see mixed at the wedding. Even at the wedding ceremonies, you see women standing among the men. They're standing together, but they're among the men. As far as I can gather, and I've asked my youth, I asked people of the old generation, I think even Rabbi Yerucham Gerulich I was talking with, he said in Europe was never a shayla, separate seating, family sat together. In other words, it wasn't like today that you have place cards and fancy meals. People came to the wedding, and father and mother and children and cousins and brothers and sisters sat together. Was never a she'ela. At least, certainly in the literature world, this question never came up. Among Gerach Hasidim, it could be that they were totally separate even then. A Gerach Hasid would have to do the research and reach a conclusion. You come to America, weddings in two World War II, all the weddings had mixed seating, the frumest people, it was taken for granted, there was never a havi, a mina to separate. There may be an exception or two, but this was the rule of the thumb. You come to the 1950s, so here already you have separate dancing, but there was no separate seating at the meals. Gedolei Yisrael sat together with their wives. Separate dancing, yes, no mechitza yet. The influx, of course, of the Hasidim in America and the success of the Hasidim in perpetuating themselves, and you all know, the Pooh Report made it clear, in 100 years from now, the only Jews left in America, basically, will be 80% or 90% Hasidish Yidden. Tremendous success, separate seating, mechitza, not just at the dancing, at the meals as well. This even affected the German Orthodox community, and you have the famous psak of Reb Yosef Breuer, who built, and you have to understand, he was very much liach in America. And many years ago, I gave a very important lecture on the different, why he was so much liach, and why, let's say, Reb Yaakov Hoffman, who was a rabbi of the Gemeinde congregation, of the more open communal congregation in Frankfurt, he came to America, and he was rabbi in Oheb Tzedek, where Moshe Schwartz's father is rabbi today, my student Alan Schwartz, and he was not successful. Ultimately comes an aliyah to Israel, and there's a certain amount of bitterness over his American rabbinical experience. I taught his grandchildren right here in this building. So you have to ask, what's the difference? The difference is very simple, that Rabbi Hoffman was appointed rabbi of an established congregation. Well, when a rabbi comes into an established congregation, it's like Kehillat Jeshurun at this moment in time, the most important Orthodox congregation probably in the world is going through a big transition, because for the first time in 115 years, the rabbi is not from the same family. As of January 1st, a new rabbi took over, the Lichtenstein Margolis dynasty has come to an end. It's a transition. Rabbi Breuer, the shul was built around Rabbi Breuer. That's the difference. It was not an established shul that he came into as rabbi. It was a shul built specifically by emigres, by refugees, by survivors for Rabbi Breuer. Now, Rabbi Breuer, the Germans always sat together. The meeting in Germany was husband, wife, wife, husband. Husband, wife, husband. Figure it out on a chart and you'll see the women sit next to each other, the men sit next to each other, and each man and wife sits next to each other. When the Frumkeit swing began, and I use popular language, not pejorative language, so Rabbi Breuer had a real dilemma. And you have to understand, in the Breuer's community, and this, I'm sure you know current events, you might not know, Simon, but in Breuer's in Washington Heights, there's been some bitter battles in the last few years over the fact that the Breuer's community, which is located 5-6 blocks from Yeshiva University, considers Yeshiva University Apikarsim, and the bulk of their children lined up in Lakewood or in right-wing yeshiva in Israel. So there was a tremendous swing in that community to the right. And they put pressure, Moshe, we just spoke about your father, and they put pressure on Rabbi Breuer. So Rabbi Breuer had to agree to separate seating at weddings. But what was his one requirement? Anybody know? Not in relation to the young married, unmarried men and women. The unmarried youngsters have to seat mixed. And that's, of course, great insight. You got to make shidduchim. You don't want to have happen what ultimately happened in Israel, in America, perhaps all over the world, that our young Jewish boys and girls are so busy acculturating and making money and conquering the world and getting degrees that no one has time to get married. And we all live with this tremendous problem today. But in Breuer's, he was very makpid that the men and women, let's say 19, 20, 21, 22, at that age level, they have to sit together. Chok v'lo yavar. Now, in Israel, it's very interesting. You go to weddings in the Sarug community. So the Sarug community, like all other Jewish communities, Baruch Hashem, we're fighting with each other, we're split. You can have Hardali weddings where there's total separation. Generally speaking, there's mixed seating. Families sit together, men and women sit together, but there's a mechitza for the dancing. That mechitza did not exist when I was growing up. We had separate dancing, but there was no mechitza. So here too, the balabatim are willing, all right, we can understand the mechitza are dancing, and women have told me they don't want men looking at them while they are dancing. I can understand it, but the meal, we don't want a mechitza, and we want to know what the sources are. And here is Rabbi Menashe Klein, he says, what are you talking about? He says, from time immemorial, all education was separate, boys and girls separate. And he says, maybe in kindergarten, we would have boys and girls together. But beyond kindergarten, always separate. Va'af melamed lo yilmod b'cheder sheyesham tarovet bachurim u'betulot afil yeshvu muvdolim v'ze afilu b'ktanim shakate layodim tam isa v'hirhurim. And he says, even if they sat separate, in other words, you come into class, and you have boys and girls, let's say you're in Ramaz, mixed clay, right? Or Flatbush, I don't know if it's separate or not. Excuse me?
Maimonides.
So you would have, did the boys sit on one side of the room, the girls on the other? No, you sat intermixed. And he says, even if there were separate classes, separate sections, boys on one side, girls on another, no one in the world, no Melamed worthy of his name would teach. And he says, even youngsters who don't have sexual concepts yet, don't have hirurim desires, for, and he says...
Is this true in Frankfurt and Vine when Hirsch started his school?
Give me 1 second. And he says, even in yeshivat and Rashi yeshivat, it is unheard of that a Rebbe should speak to a mixed class. And the older they get, he uses the rabbinic expression, it's like taking flax and burning it, because they're... You have Yetzer Hara, there's no end to what could happen. And that's why afilu rak b'shchuna, even in one area, lo yasu beit Yaakov saviv yeshiva v'lom de Torah. I have to talk about this now. Now, Yitzchak raised an interesting question. By the way, no one can leave. We have exactly a minion.
I have to go.
You have to go? Can you...
A couple of guys are coming.
Okay. Well, what do you have tonight?
I have an evening with friends.
Oh, no. Okay, but say that. I don't want to embarrass you. I thought you have a wedding. I wanted to know I was getting married tonight.
I had an engagement party yesterday, my granddaughter.
Oh, Mazal Tov. Whose daughter?
Joshua's
daughter. So Zion.
He has 2 children
married. I know you have great grandchildren for Kanayin Hara.
One.
You're going to get more. You'll get there. Be'ezrat Hashem. I also began with one. And Yomo has a wedding. Yomo has a wedding tonight. Okay, so you get us a few more. Okay. Now, Yitzchak raised a very good question. And the Hirshin Shita was very unique. Do you know what Rav Hirsch's Shita was? I give him all the credit in the world. I spoke about it many, many years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago already, in my Monday class. Rav Hirsch's Shita was... Boys and girls in one campus, separate schools. The idea behind it was very simple. You have to have separation. You can't teach, let's say you're teaching Gemara, Matzah Petach Patuach. How can you teach that to a mixed class? Understand? All right. There are the Gemaras too. Now, I'm not in favor of leaving out a Gemara. This is not a Suberman translation of Rashi. Remember what he does? Certain Rashis, which he considered too sensuous, he leaves them out. Gemara has to prepare its learner for life, and part of life is sex. And if you understand the Gemara well, then you'll be a decent sexual individual. So I'm not in favor of, God forbid, skipping. But on the other hand, you can't teach Yisha Nikdash Fosha Durak and the Kesef Ishtar and the Bia, what is Bia, Gemar Bia, Hatchalit Bia, Hachnasat HaTorah, we punished them, Tzniut. But his greatness was, if it's on one campus, the boys and girls will get a chance to learn how to relate to each other. They'll walk to school together. There was genius behind the Hirshian idea. Did it work? Absolutely. He recreated an entire orthodoxy. Problems they had. Dr. Mordechai Breuer's doctorate, I'll call one doctor and one rabbi, they were first cousins, but one was more involved in Masorah, the text, one was involved in history. He did a brilliant doctorate on German orthodoxy, obviously. A 100 years ago, 50 years ago, I think he ends off with World War II, if I'm not mistaken. Could be World War I. It's a brilliant doctorate. And he shows the success and the problems. The problems are very similar to the problems we have in the greater YU world. So I can't say you're going to dismiss Hirsch. You're not going to dismiss why you. We all have problems in the interaction between Ger and Toshav. Satmar has its problems. Lubavitch has its problems. We all have these problems. But the problems that the Germans had were very, very similar. That was the Hirschian Shita. But I'll tell you now what's very fascinating, and I'll reveal a state secret. This question, what he just said now, that they wouldn't open a Beit Yaakov in an area where they're yeshivat, this question, this feeling, this sentiment has resulted in major budgetary outlays and ongoing cantankerous situations in the Torah world. What am I talking about? So now I take you back to Yeshiva University, the 1960s. Stern College is starting to expand. Stern College is a big success story. Even today, it's more successful than Yeshiva College, I'm told, in attracting students. It could be the percentage of frumkeit is better there, those who are committed. Could be. What do you do? There was a senior citizens residence in Inwood, right adjacent to Washington Heights. A Jewish, I forgot what it was called, Inwood Center for something for senior citizens. They were moving further out. Could be they moved to Riverdale, I don't know. I mean, I was in America yet. I was teaching in Reitz and YU. But I wasn't in America yet because I was in the Rabbinate of New Jersey, and I didn't know all the inner politics of New York because I had to get back to Jersey very quickly, and that was my life, was in the Rabbinate in Jersey. Stern College could have bought that campus for $1. Do you have any idea what that would have meant to Yeshiva's budget? And they could have expanded there, bought up housing around it. This is Washington Heights.
Why couldn't YU buy the building, the property for a dollar, not Stern?
What are you asking?
It's the same, it's a university.
I mean, why you could have bought it for Stern for $1.
Forget about it for Stern. Why couldn't YU buy
it? They needed it for Stern, not for YU. It was blocks away from the Yeshiva College campus. You should know that the Rashi Yeshiva held a meeting of total protest led by the Rav. A petition was passed around. I don't know where that petition is. It would be an invaluable document if found today. It could be sold at auction for tens of thousands of dollars because I know who the first signature was on the document. Yosef Dov Ben Hagon Chachasid Moshe Halevi Soloveitchik. I know who the last signature was on the document. A guy named Aaron Yitzchak Rotkoff. I know who didn't sign the document. You're sitting, Rabbi Hertz? Rabbi Yosef Weiss, who was just Nifta. I said, Rebbe, how come you're not signing? He says, I cannot hurt Dr. Belkin. That document, that chayrim, that meeting canceled the plan, and why you had to wind up spending millions upon millions of dollars to buy a property in mid-Manhattan, the most valuable property in the world, to help Stern College expand. And even until today, you can't get enough room in mid-Manhattan for Stern College. So you see, Rabbi Menashe Klein's comment is very insightful. You don't open up a Beit Yaakov near a yeshiva. And it's not only Rabbi Menashe Klein thinking this way. I'm talking about, all right, Rothkopf doesn't count because Rothkopf had to sign. Do you understand why? His Rebbe signed. If your Rebbe signs, now I can tell you, Michael, you know what happened to the document? The Rav gave it to the Mashkiach, Rabbi Mori Rebbe from Musa, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson. He took the Chayrim with all the signatures. Where it is today, I don't know. But I can assure you, if anyone can come up with that document and put it up for auction, you'll be able to help your children buy apartments, not in the heart of Jerusalem, but outside the heart. No? Let me go one step further and end off. Boy, I see you guys don't know history, Torah history. You're sitting in Yerushalayim. You know what this area is called? Givat Rakafot. It is between Bayit Vagan and, no, help me out, Givat Mordechai.
No. My day, this was Givat Mordechai.
Now we're close to Bayit Vagan, but it's Givat Rakafot. No one, that's the real name.
It doesn't say that in any
sign. Forget about signs. Take the map of the area and you'll see what I'm talking about.
It
used to be Rakafut growing here. Just give it to Rakafut. Even before I changed my name, it was give it to Rakafut. Legally. New gentlemen, what happened here? Tell me, what happened in Machon? Who's our neighbor here? Machon Lev. No? Machon Lev, the founder of Machon Lev, Professor Zev Lev, with somebody like Rav Yehuda Cooperman. They were caught between two worlds. They lived in a world that no longer exists. Poli Agudat Yisrael. Pi, you've heard that expression? Doesn't exist today. Either you're Tzioni Dati or in Agudis. There's no longer a bridge in the middle. Fine. There will be a bridge again. It's being built again. Because that's life. Life doesn't stand still. Dada Veshovtov. But Professor Lev had Charediyut in him. When he opened up Machon Lev, he had to get a bracha from Rav Shach to go ahead. And Rav Shach said, I'll only not put you in Chayrim if you do not call it a yeshiva. So he couldn't call it a yeshiva. It's Machon Lev, Beit Sefer Gabbalah Technologia. Today it's called Merkaz Lev. They're trying to get academic recognition. They already give bachelor's, master's. They want to become a full university. Ultimately, they will, like Ariel. Ultimately, they will. No? Now we have a different problem. The problem I alluded to that we're all living with. The women are coming out of the house. The women want education. Machon Lev gets involved with women's education. What do they call it? Machon Tal. Exactly. Now you need a place for Machon Tal. Right across the road, there was a big building that was part of the phone company where they trained technicians how to fix and work telephones. Today, everything is done by computer. The building served no purpose. It was put up for sale. There were politics involved. And Machon Lev could have gotten the building for the girls' campus for a shekel, if not a shekel, a million shekelim, but way below market value. They had the money. They wanted to do it. But Professor Lev, who was no longer active at the time, had brought in a rabbinic faculty that was right of center. The faculty asset. They lost that building. Take a look. A whole campus for a technological college exists there. And Machon Lev suffers there. Machon Tal is in Givat Shaul. They're paying a fortune. They don't have a nice campus.
Anyway.
Don't have an open... Today it's a different ballpark. But right now, Machon Tal is in Givat Shaul, right or wrong. But do you know what happened? Gentlemen, you know what happened as a result? No, you're all daydreaming. Overnight, the whole rabbinic faculty was retired. And if you wished, you could be rehired with the understanding that the rabbinical faculty no longer has a say, a veto power in the major decisions of Machon Lev. And there were light year changes, ultimately leading to the situation at this moment in time. Tell the class who is the Rosh Yeshiva of Machon Lev Gyomo? No? Rav Rimon. Do you know who Rav Rimon is? Talmud Mufak of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, of Rav Yehuda Amital, a Ziskite of a Talmud Chacham, of a human being, a man of knowledge. His grandfather was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Avram Yitzchak, a Kohen Cook. I hope I'm not pushing in a generation. It's not his father, I believe his grandfather. His the poet, a beautiful poet. I taught his sister, she was a Ziskite of a human being. She lives in Gibat Mordechai. What a story. Gentlemen, Rav Menashe Klein didn't realize how contemporary he was with that one little sentence, even in the Torah world, way beyond his world in Borough Park. Adkan, I have to review. I have a lot to give out. Go and grab guys, dead or alive. We need two. Better get three.
It's a major financial issue.
I know. I know. Yes. Forget about two stamps. Yeah, the now, Michael, what is he? Michael, what is Moshe talking about that they're bringing it here?
You know the building site behind Machon Lev?
Yeah.
You just recently built a family housing unit for couples. We have, so they're renting it.
Right.
They built two entrances. One will go to Machon Tal, the bottom.
And where will Machon Tal? They're building Machon Tal?
It's in the back. There's a whole building site. You know where Shalva is?
Sit down, gentlemen. You know, we're finished here.
You know.
Okay, I hear.
Under,
look,
okay.
Gentlemen. Okay, we finished out today these tshuvot. Tomorrow I would miss for all the money in Fort Knox. Anyone here a chiyuv? I don't want to hold anyone up. Everyone sidurim are here. Michael, take over. Vahu rachum. Yomo is reminding me, we're meeting on health and happiness tomorrow morning. Das Bedanya. Oh, we have guests here and people have to catch buses. Vahu rachum.